Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
I am joined by Lisa Scottolini, who is out with a brand new novel. This one's called Eternal, and if somebody had asked me before I read Eternal to describe Lisa Scottolini, I would have said she's really a cognoscente of the legal thrillers and a lot of funny essays, but you know, you have really dove headfirst into this whole idea of historical fiction, Lisa, with this book, Eternal, about the eternal city of Rome, and that thing had to have been just brewing, those words brewing around your head for quite some time before you put these on paper, because this is a lifetime love, I can tell.
Oh, you're such a sweetheart to say that, Brian, and thank you. And for calling me a condescenti, I'm trying to think if I'm a condescenti of anything, maybe chocolate, that would be it.
Okay.
But thank you for that. It's true, Eternal is really, it's a story I wanted to write since college, when I kind of, which was ages ago, in the Jurassic, when I first, I was lucky enough to be penned to take a course with Philip Roth. The late Philip Roth, sadly. And it was a seminar, and he taught us about Primo Levi and the Italian Holocaust, and sort of a really seminal and tragic event that took place in Rome in 1943. And I hadn't known anything about it, even though I, you know, was fairly well read. And I was surprised by it, and I thought there was an injustice that I kind of didn't know it. My whole life, I'd just been wanting to write it. And over the years, listen, I've written 33 novels now, thinking you have to return to Italy in your mind and fascist Italy and understand what led up to that event and that story and make it into a story, make people feel it. Like it's really a fiction, but it is set based on a true event, and that's Eternal.
Well, I've had so many writers tell me over the years that a lot of times, most of the times, the characters drive the story, but this thing, it was an event that drove the story, and then you had to backtrack and make the characters. So how did that process work for you?
Well, you know, it's interesting, because I'm not a good planner. And so I said I had in the back of my mind that this thing was going to happen in 1943. But I thought, I really want to, you know, all of my novels, whatever you call them, thrillers, domestic thrillers, legal thrillers, are about families and about justice and the impact of lack of justice, usually, on families. So I just said, you're going to start with a family. And to make people feel it, particularly in a place like Italy, because there's so much in the front of this novel that is about all of the wonderful stuff that we associate. I'm Italian-American, so I grew up with tomato sauce in my veins, you know, like the food, the wine, the music, the art. And I, especially now, wanted people to be swept away. And so when you imagine these three characters, and it's essentially a love triangle. You know, it's a girl who has two best friends and kind of falls in love with them both and can't decide, and they fall in love with her. And you wonder, how are they all going to stay friends after this and what's going to happen? And there's sort of this creeping shadow of fascism. That's how I thought of it, like just darkening over a city. And how that affects their daily lives. And all of a sudden, what is it that made Italy fascist? And interesting, in Italy, the movement was not anti-Semitic in the beginning. Fascism was not, so that Jews joined fascism in the same proportion as Gentiles. So that when fascism turned anti-Semitic, there was a double betrayal of Rome's Jews in particular, and I wanted to look at that and how that impacts these families. But at heart, it's really a story of these three people and living through an impossibly difficult time. And honestly, you know, there are difficult times in life. We're living through one now. Certainly it's not an analogy, but the idea that this main character, Elisabetta, falls back on a strength and a resilience that she didn't know she had, that I can relate to. I think people can relate to that.
You know, there was something I read right at the beginning of the novel, and it stuck with me throughout the entire time I was reading it, and it had to do with the way children are dealing with things in their lives. And you wrote in the beginning of the novel that the children were doing homework from their compulsory youth group. And that stuck with me throughout the rest of it, because I thought, I can't imagine a compulsory youth group now. You can't even get kids to join the Scouts now, let alone a compulsory youth group. So what was going on with the kids there that they were required to do this, and what if they didn't?
Well, that's so fascinating you picked up on that, because I was very subtle about it in the beginning, so you're a careful reader. But I really wanted that to sort of, people to start to think about that. Mussolini started the youth group. You know, it's so interesting to me to have an education and educate myself over these 20 years and 30 years, 30, 40 really, that to understand that it was Mussolini Hitler copied Mussolini, not the other way around. So the Mussolini had a youth group, and one of these characters, you start to understand, everyone was required to be in the fascist youth group. So these characters are all fascists when they start. They're young people. And you start to go, what was it that made fascism take hold? And why do some fall away? And why do some become anti-fascist? And why do some cleave to it? And they had to go to after-school sessions. They had homework for it. They had a lot of physical exercises. It's interesting when you look at the disparity between boys and girls. The boys were taught to use a rifle. It was paramilitary training for young boys. The girls were taught to do exercises with hoops that were like the precursors to hula hoops, because fascists really did not, what they were against women's equality. Women were supposed to have a lot of babies and stay home. And that's something that Elisabetta struggles against. But it's really interesting to see how just this authoritarianism takes hold in Rome and what practical effect it has on children growing up.
You know, you
inside that.
You're obviously a daughter. You've been a child, been a teenager, but you dedicate this book to your daughter and the whole idea about how these children interact with each other. Did any of that come from watching your child as she grew versus your own remembrances of childhood?
That's so interesting to say that. I think a little bit. You know, the book is titled Eternal, and you're right to point out it's in the Eternal City. But I really thought about time as conflated in this book. So these characters are young adults. They're not really children when they start, per se. And then you grew up, like, one of them is basically a head of household, Elisabetta, whose family's kind of falling apart. She takes care of everything in their house. And I thought about my own experience. I thought about my mother's experience. I thought about my daughter's experience. Because to a certain extent, you know, these, if you're writing a story about a family, everybody's in a family of one sort or another. And to a certain extent, I started to really think that time is conflated in a family. In other words, let me try this out on you. I am my mother. I have my mother in me, even though she's passed. My father, too. And my daughter as well. That all of our families are always kind of with us in our memories and in our hearts. And when you start to really think in those terms, when I looked at the landscape of Rome, and I went there several times for trips, for research for this book, you know, you look across, I learned the word palimpsest, which is a reference from a medieval manuscript, and the idea was that when they erased over writing in the medieval times with parchment, you could see underneath what existed prior. So when you look over the vista of Rome, you see Roman ruins from 2,000 years ago, you see brick from the 1920s, you see plaster from Trastevere, you see a lot of architecture overlaid on top of each other. The layers of time are laid bare. They're visible. Just like, and I thought, that is like the generations of a family. And you start to think of history as the generations of family stories, one on top of the other. And so that's how you get to the point where you start to understand that this story is a timeless one. And it's a story about identity, it's a story about love, and it's a story about family and justice set in a time that is really difficult and leads into war. So that's really where I was coming from. It's not children per se, it's really timelessness.
I'm chatting with Lisa Scottolini about her fantastic new novel, Eternal. She's a best-selling author and has written tons of books, 30-some books, but this one is the newest one. You mentioned, Lisa, that the seed was planted in this with Philip Roth's class that you took. And I know in Iowa, Philip Roth taught at the Iowa Writers' Workshop in the early 60s and hated his time here. He wrote about it in Esquire, but we all knew him later from Portnoy's Complaint. You sit down in that class, you're a fledgling writer. You want to be
right.
You want to be a writer. You and I think you've said that you took a bunch of notes. God knows where they are now, but when you somebody like Philip Roth, who wrote so many words that we've all known and loved, is there anything he can really teach you about the craft of writing that you still think about today, or is it mostly anecdotal?
Oh, my God, yes. I mean, there's so much. I mean, but the headline is this, you know. This was a literature seminar. It was only 15 people. And it was a year long. So we read, he wanted to examine, the first half was some of the Holocaust literature because he wanted to examine behavior in extreme circumstances. And it was so interesting. But what I really learned was, what he would sit there and do, and it was fascinating. I mean, it's like, taking science, like physics from Einstein, you know, because the guy sits there. And he's going to take you through the novel, and we're going to talk about Flaubert, for example. He's going to go through remarkable sentences I remember that he did that a lot. So there would be, let's take a look at this sentence and talk about why this sentence is so great, why it matters in this paragraph, and how it encapsulates everything about the story, the character, the voice, you know. And I think he taught me so many things. But one of the things, which I carry with me all the time, is to pay attention just to the sentence. And so Hemingway famously said, write drunk, edit sober.
Sure.
I don't do that. But I get the idea, which is that when you write, you're going to put everything down in first draft. And this is true to anyone listening to you who wants to write. And the edit is when you really start to look at the sentences. And that's when I think about Philip Roth. And because he, I just go, do you need the sentence? And then once you decide if you need the sentence, it has to make the cut, then you go, how can I make this sentence better? And that really granular attention to detail is what he focused us in on. And I must tell you, I love to read. That's why I became an English major. That's why I love my job now. I get to read all the time. I love to talk to you about books. But he made me focus on this sentence as a whole and what its function is in the novel. That's kind of mind-blowing.
As you went through the different drafts of Eternal, did you find it harder to cut sentences out of a book like this than you do out of, say, a legal thriller?
You know, I'll tell you, this not first time in my life I handed in a 1,000-page manuscript. That's insane, because this was so much that I've been working on for like so many years and gathering, and I told this story of two generations in the first draft. And my editor said, you know, I'm not sure that people are going to want to read their 1,000-page novel. I'm like, oh, I guess you're right, which I've never done. I mean, I've never done anything like that. But so basically, I threw out more than sentences. I mean, it got cut in half, reshaped, refocused, and kind of to get the reader to think about Elisabetta. Who is she going to become? Which man is she going to choose? Why does she love both of them? What do they offer her? And how is she going to find herself as time goes on, as fascism suppresses her, as war comes on, and basically she's caught, you know, in the middle of that. And I also wanted to talk about food. I mean, Italians love food. Everybody loves food. And, you know, how in the beginning of this book, she's a great cook. She's a pasta chef. She in the beginning, there's so much food. It's plentiful and abundant, as it was. It's so much part of Italian life. But as war comes on, it's rationed. And then when the Nazis occupy Rome, these Romans are starving. People were starving, the ghetto in particular. Food was weaponized against the Jews of Rome. And so I wanted, you know, there's a great quote by Dante, and I'm going to paraphrase it, but the idea is this: there's no greater sorrow than to remember how happy you were in times of misery. And I said, that's what I want the reader to feel. Believe it or not, it has an uplifting ending, but I want the reader to feel what it is like to live under fascism and then be occupied and try to survive.
Did you have the ending figured out at first and then work toward it?
Absolutely not. I never, you know me. People say, do you know how it ends? I don't know how it middles. I never do. And I think that's a good thing. I actually do. It makes you very anxious. It makes you drink a lot of caffeine like I just did this morning. It makes you go, oh, my God, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? But if you're nervous and you don't know what's going to happen, I feel like that tension keeps the pages turning with the reader. You really want to pace it so that you also keep the tension going. But you want to, what's going to happen in this book we are all experiencing together? And I let the characters do lead me there.
And did you have that experience that Philip Roth would talk about where, you know, Marco says something and you say, well, I don't really like that, but that's what he said, so I have to leave it.
I did have that sometimes. But then when I look at it again on the edit and I go, does that serve the plot? You know, because there isn't much time in a book. I've never written a book that takes, it's a 20-year time span. It's the same number of pages as a thriller. So I really had to be really, really judicious. That's a nice word in cutting. I had to, like, get out the hacksaw. So it wasn't hard. If something didn't make the cut, it didn't stay in. And I think the book is better for it.
Well, I just absolutely love it. The book is called Eternal. It's the newest one by Lisa Scottolini. It's available now. Go pick it up and pick up anything she's written because they're all fantastic. Lisa, just another fantastic offering from you, something I've never read before. And thank you for joining me to talk about it.
I love talking with you. And thank you so much for this. You're always just terrific. Just terrific conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.